Case of Tonsillitis, written and recorded by Jeffrey Jones. Tonsillitis, one of the scariest diagnoses that an 11-year-old kid can hear. While most children experience it at some point in their lives, in the spring of 1968, my older brother Donnie got the worst case of tonsillitis that I've ever heard tell of. It started, as I'm sure most cases do, a scratchy sore throat, some redness, swelling, and tenderness to the touch, all accompanied by a low-grade fever. Of course, Mom tried all of her usual home remedies, you know, gargling with salt water, honey and lemon, and other like-minded solutions. Nothing seemed to work. Finally, having exhausted every family concoction ever conceived of, Mom concluded that a visit to old Doc Marsa was in order. The doctor was an elderly man that ran a small family practice in the village of Lake Orion, Michigan. From what I remember being said, he had been administering his folksy, no-nonsense style of medicine bag miracles for more than a couple or three decades around them parts. In fact, all of the kids of the last two generations either had been birthed by him or had at least been treated by him at one time or another. Although I seem to remember some Frankenstein-type moniker being used to describe him amongst the family, he was our go-to guy. Anything that couldn't be taken care of at home was referred to the old doc, and he always came through. So it was that on a Thursday morning in May, Donnie was to be kept home from school so as to pay a visit to the old Sawbones. Throughout the school day, all of the teachers had been asking me how Donnie was doing. When I related the details of his condition, every one of them had said something to the effect that, well, I guess he'll be in the hospital by the end of the day. The more people that I talked to, the more I came to understand that Donnie needed an operation, and soon. I had not really thought about his illness much before now. I just assumed that it was a typical sore throat, no big deal. Now I was a little worried about him, and more than a little scared for him too. Wow, he was the first of us kids to require surgery. And to be honest, I was glad it was him and not me. After all, I thought, he is the oldest. During the 45-minute bus ride home, I acted just like a typical 10-year-old braggart who was proud of his big brother. I guess the natural storyteller in me just kind of came out, and I ended up telling a real whopper of a tale to a captive audience of elementary school kids who couldn't have gotten away anyway. I weaved so many exaggerations and outright lies into the story of Donnie's trauma that by the time the bus dropped me off, I had the boy at death's door. I was so convincing that I had begun to believe it myself. Like any good storyteller, though, I already had an ending worked out in my head. It would be an ending worthy enough for Medical Center, Marcus Welby, or any of the other medical dramas on TV at the time. As you might imagine, though, this wouldn't be a very good story if it turned out the way most stories like this do. No, this one would turn out to have one of those so-called surprise endings that would require a major rewrite. As I bolted through the front door, eager to see if my brother's condition had changed, I noticed that the mood in the house was more somber than it had been that morning. Sitting there on the sofa flanked by my mother and my aunt, Donnie didn't appear to be any worse than he had earlier. However, both my mom and Aunt Glenda had serious expressions on their faces. Dang, I thought, Donnie's condition must be as bad as I had just expounded it to be. What's wrong with Donnie, I asked. Does he need an operation? Yes, he does, Jeff, Mom said. He's got to get his tonsils out. You better put your stuff away. We've got to be at the hospital in an hour.
No.
Something about the way she had said that just didn't sound right to me. It was only then that I noticed that there were two overnight bags on the floor. Donnie wouldn't need both of them, I thought. Uh-oh, what's going on? What do you mean, we? I stammered. While I don't recall her full explanation now, she said something about the doctor offering her some kind of two-for-one special. Seems how money was always tight around our house. I guess you can justify looking for a bargain anywhere you can find one. But a two-for-one tonsillectomy? Come on, man. It didn't seem to matter that my tonsils were fine. I didn't even have a sore throat. I even tried belting out a wonderfully loud version of "How much is that doggy in the window?" Nope. Didn't work. I was going to share my brother's fate. Or so I thought. You know, it's funny how mothers can be so tricky sometimes. Well, somewhat vague anyway. After all, she had eased her way into using me as a discount coupon without much trouble. I wouldn't be surprised to learn that she had asked for a multi-kid discount. She probably did. She was very good at stretching a dollar. However the deal had been struck, I had about as much chance of changing her mind as an ice cube does surviving a summer sidewalk. None. After providing for a dramatic admittance procedure commendable of the most uncooperative, panicky, and troublesome youth imaginable, I was settled in next to Donnie in the pre-op ward on the fifth floor. We each had our own fancy bed that could fold in many different ways. We shared a color TV that had a remote control, and we even got a pretty good meal. Maybe this isn't so bad, I thought. Wrong. I know that this question has been asked 1,000 times over, but why in the world do the nurses in a hospital come into your room every couple of hours throughout the night? As we all know, they don't come in empty-handed either. They're always taking your temperature, checking your pulse. Now for God's sake, are you going to take another blood sample? I spent the whole night afraid to fall asleep. I felt that we were trapped on the island of Dr. Moreau. What new horror would the morning bring? As the sun began to sneak its way through the window blinds, so too did a nurse and two orderlies seem to spring from the shadows unnoticed. With all the demeanor of a boot camp drill sergeant, she ordered the orderlies to hold me down whilst she delivered the dreaded pre-op shot. I don't know if she had been briefed by the previous shift, but this Nurse Diesel certainly was prepared. Although I fought back with all the vigor of a house cat being run through a shower, I lost. The pre-op hit home, directly into the right buttocks. It wasn't but a moment or two before I was strung out on the bed, looking forward now to the rest of this story. Donnie, on the other hand, took his pre-op like a champion. I'm not sure if he was really that tough or if he just wanted to make me look all the more foolish, but a couple of minutes later we were both in la-la land and on our way to the operating room. The next memory, for obvious reasons, is a little fuzzy. I remember the doctor looking over me, and in a swaying Dr. Kildare kind of moment, the gas mask lowering as if in slow motion toward my face. "Count backward from 100," a voice commanded. 99, 98, 90. Arrgh! The hoarse cry aroused me from my stupor. That wasn't my groan I had heard. Arrgh! It came again. My pain and soreness was bad, but I couldn't imagine wanting to inflame it that much more with an audible outburst such as Donnie had just done. Looking in his direction, I saw Donnie, half laying, half sitting with his sheet lifted up. He was staring down toward his feet. It wasn't his feet that he was looking at, though. No, Donnie, poor Donnie, had just been the victim of an unplanned circumcision. Well, unplanned on his part. It seems that when he was born at the U.S. Army Medical Center in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, The doctors there had not performed a routine procedure. For reasons known only to her, Mom had decided that this was an opportune time to do so. Knowing that Donnie would have disagreed, Mom had secretly conspired with old Doc Marcy to make the modifications while he was in the neighborhood. I'll bet that there was another discount coupon in the mix somewhere. You can believe that I checked my packet for completeness. Seeing that it was, my pain and discomfort eased somewhat. I could only imagine what my older brother was experiencing, and boy was I glad that I only had to imagine. Over the course of the next couple of days in the hospital, I made a swift recovery. Donnie's recovery was somewhat slower. While I could devote all of my nice cool ice cream to relieving my sore throat, Donnie's ice cream was doing double duty. Not only was he using it to relieve his throat, but I know that I saw him slip a little beneath the sheet occasionally in a vain attempt to relieve his sore, aching tinky also. I suppose that I would have tried too. When Sunday morning rolled around, Nurse Diesel showed back up, minus her two goons. She was very helpful in getting us checked out and on our way. If she thought that I had been a problem prior to the operation, she had had her hands full dealing with Donnie the last few days. He did not like the idea of being skinned, and he let everyone know about it. Now she could send him home. Good riddance. Watching Donnie take his first steps while fully dressed was a comedy unto itself. I'm sorry to laugh at my big brother, but seeing him hunched over like a little old man trying so hard to keep his tinky from rubbing against the front of his pants was some kind of funny. He was bent over forward almost to 90 degrees, his butt pushed back behind him in an overly exaggerated goose-me posture. His head pulled back as far as it could go in an attempt to see where he was walking. Did I say walking? A half-shuffling, limping duck would better describe his movements. Man, was it pitiful. Pitiful. Donnie was just as agitated as he had been in the hospital. Every time that he moved, he winced and groaned in obvious discomfort. Knowing that he had to return to school the following day inspired him to try to find some way to make his movements more bearable. Necessity being the mother of invention, he found it in an old bootlace. It was a clever contraption. He had looped the middle of the string around the buttonhole on the fly of his trousers and then taken the two loose ends in either side of his mouth. Although still having to walk stooped way over, it was an obvious improvement. He did look somewhat like an old milk wagon horse, though, reins and all. Seeing my big brother humbled in this way inspired the boldness in me. I saw that he was vulnerable, and I sought to take advantage of the situation. Even though I knew it would lead to what can only be described as a little brother beatdown later, I couldn't resist teasing him by calling him the most obvious of nicknames at the time. That's right, Donnie Dallywhacker. Donnie Dallywhacker, Donnie Dallywhacker, ran into a weed whacker. I would run around him in circles singing this nonsensical tune. It made him so mad. I knew that he couldn't catch me. The joke would be on me. I guess that I did rather press my luck, though. I should have known that he would have healed sufficiently in 2 weeks to initiate a retaliatory strike. But again, Donnie was nothing if not clever. He knew that I grew bolder by the day, and he bade his time well. One afternoon after school, he lured me in close, and then BAM! The full apocalyptic nuclear Armageddon commenced. In other words, he kicked my butt. And how? It wasn't the first time, and it certainly wouldn't be the last. But for all the times that I didn't think I deserved it, I knew I had this time. Yes, it was worth it, and given the chance, I would do it all over again. Donnie, of course, fully recovered from his ordeal that sunny spring so long ago. Being the rough and tumble kind of kid that he was would definitely lead to more visits to the doctor and more than one trip to the emergency room as well. I don't think that he'll ever forget that particular visit to old Doc Marcin in the spring of 1968, though, and that woeful diagnosis. Son, you've got a bad case of tonsillitis.